the mountaintop, the giant voice rings out, "Stay tuned." What a come down. What a message from the heights of Parnassus. And a tiny figure, tattered and torn, can be seen moving across the barren landscape. A giant load being pushed before him. And a sign that reads enigmatically, "Will travel." Anniversaries, weddings, an occasional banquet are specialty. Supermarket openings. By job lots. Honest, reliable, sober, industrious, square-jawed, weak-kneed, lily-livered. Stay tuned, friends. Excelsior, stay tuned, the lily-livered of the world. We'll be here until 1 o'clock tomorrow morning, pursuing what mankind has always pursued in the fashion that he best sees it at the moment. Now, that, of course, has been a problem that many of us have pondered back and forth, this business of what mankind has always pursued. I'll never forget sitting next to my mother's knee. She had this huge, giant, wonderful old granite knee. Great old knee. Had these handholds. I can remember standing next to my mother's knee. I was about 5 or 6 years old. And she said, "Son, always keep your eye on the subject." Well, I didn't know what she meant, of course, you know. But I do remember she had this great knee. So tonight's program will be developed along the lines of, let's all honor knees for a change. We've had enough trouble with subjects and predicates. We've had enough trouble with the, you know, the surface things. We've gone through all the surface things. And it seems to me that we can do something else tonight. We can, it's summer, you know? It's summer, really. And it's too bad that you're listening to the radio. It is, really. We can only but extend our hand in quiet, sympathetic goodwill to those of you who are forced to, you know. Oh, look at all this wonderful time, all this wonderful weather, all this stuff all around us, and here we sit. I'm here and you're there. I'm in Studio Land. Studio Land has a peculiar kind of sterility about it, which we will discuss later on after 11:15, when we touch upon our sterility portion of our program. And you're out there in Radio Land, where things are lush and green, where things grow. Out there where people do things, like send in box tops, answer questions, write letters of protest. You're out there in Radio Land, the real world, the real world. Has it ever occurred to you that what you have out there is real? What we have here is, this is all artificial, false, ridiculous. All of this stuff. Don't you believe any of it? Any of them? You're out there in Radio Land. No, I'm in. Is it which one? That's right, you're in Radio Land, aren't you? Yeah. You see, that's what I mean. All this is unreal, false, sterile. How can I escape? How can I become one of you out there? I've heard all kinds of stories about what goes on the outside. All sorts of stuff. I don't believe any of them, though. I can't. I can't let myself believe them. If I do, all everything I have here will crumble here in Studio Land. Got to cling to something. A few dreams. Belief or two. Jean Cocteau said, destroy the dream and you destroy the man. So, you know, I have to hang on a few things. I have to believe that nothing happens out there, but I know it does. All you box top sender-inners. All you people out there in Radio Land. It's too bad it's the way it is. I'm here and you're there. Ah, gladly would I indeed, oh, but yes. Who's for beach lotto tonight? This is a great beach lotto night. Who's for beach lotto tonight? About 4 o'clock in the morning. 7,582 people. We might even make the sport pages. Can't you see yourself in the lineup? the lineup, 16 columns long. And there you are. You see, you scored 2 goals last night at Jones Beach in Beach Lotto. Oh. You see, isn't it pitiful where I sit here and spin these poor little glass dreams? Just plain old... Oh, play it over again. Come on, fellas, once again. That's it. Play it over. We've got nothing but time here. Spinning all these poor little idle dreams. You know, sort of. It's like as if it's a jigsaw puzzle. I took a couple of the pieces once. You know, I didn't bring them back. I have a friend who has... But you're not interested in my friends, are you? Of course not. And that is the secret of it all. You're not interested, and I'm not interested. I am not interested in my friends, nor are you. Okay? Fine, now we're on a good, solid, equitable basis. You don't like me, and I don't like you. And it's just as well that I'm here in Studio Land and you're in Radio Land. So let us entertain no false notions. I am no good. But, of course, the secret is either you. So let's not have any of this business here. You know, you keep your opinions to yourself, I'll keep mine to myself. And we'll get this thing going here, baby. Yeah. Hey, don't you miss magic? Really? I mean, weren't those the great days when we used to have magic? Or am I still insufferable, huh? You people don't know the meaning of the word yet. Yes, isn't this great? Listen to this crowd in the back. What's that? You hear that? You don't always have to say everything you mean, you know. Listen to this bassman, he's great. You don't always have to say everything you mean. That's where you make your mistake, you know. You always try to say things. That's great, listen to that. There's a certain hairy vitality about this that most of us lack today. Ah, yes, sir. That's my baby. No, sir. No, that's I'm sorry. That's another program. Tell you about the time that I wrote the message on the inside of a Baby Ruth candy wrapper and floated it in a Castoria bottle down the Chicago River. Castoria. Is there anyone out there who's willing to cry for us now for it? Well, no, you don't float anything down the Chicago River. It floats up the Chicago River. No, they reversed the direction of the Chicago River. They really did. It's one of the mammoth achievements of mankind. Oh, that's great, 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 great. Huh. That's just the way I feel tonight. Hey, play another cut on that side, will you? And hold it in abeyance. The one, the cut I want you to play is Blues I Love to Sing. Hold it in abeyance there. We use this occasionally when things look the way things look tonight. I have this terrible, 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 awful feeling of... it's not really frustration. It's a kind of borderline, a case of immense disappointment or something. Here it is, June. It's springtime. It's almost summer, isn't it? 16th, isn't it? Summer will be in 4 days or 5. It's June, and all these people everywhere are stretched out for millions of miles, one after the other, bumper to bumper, sitting there with the radiators overheating. Isn't that a wonderful feeling, though, in the June air? It is, though. I came over the bridge there by Yonkers. I don't know what the name of that bridge is. And I was stopped for a moment. You know, traffic was slowing up, and the windows were open in the car. Since it's a Triumph TR3, it was wonderful, you know. I'm sitting there with all this June air around me, and I could hear the muffled curses of the populace. Just quiet and muffled. It's a wonderful spring sound. And you could hear them lowing in the bushes once in a while. And it just gave me a feeling of warmth, a feeling of almost, it's the feeling you get from reading Dostoevsky, you know? a feeling of being one of this great mass of humankind all marching to the brink. And it's nice and warm to know that, you know, there's this great crowd all on each side, you know, jostling each other with their ill-fitting sport coats, all moving slowly toward the brink and muttering muffled curses under their breath in this quiet June atmosphere. Isn't it wonderful to be alive? Take a deep breath, one deep breath. Now, say after me, it's great to be me. I know. You see, it doesn't work, does it? Nothing works. Well, I wouldn't say nothing. Stay tuned for our magic phrase department. Guaranteed to work. Children cry for it. Babies cry for it. Oh, yes. Oh. Yeah, baby. Can't you see this queen leaning over your shoulder saying this stuff in your ear, you know? Listen. Come on, baby. I got to finish this hamburger here. You ever been in one of these joints where the people walk around the tables and they sing to you? That's a terribly embarrassing thing. I'm in this joint one night with this girl and we're eating a plate of spaghetti and there's this guy that plays his cheap guitar. And he comes over and hangs over the table, see? And he's been eating garlic. And he's playing this guitar and he's doing La Paloma. Sort of a South Chicago type La Paloma. And he's playing the guitar and the spaghetti tasted terrible and the La Paloma was awful. But you're not again. I can see that interested in my... I don't blame you. But can't you just hear that?
Oh, but you're kidding.
It's just the way I am, baby. You see what I mean? There's a certain hairy vitality about this that all of us lack today. We're kind of poured out of a plastic mold, each one of us. Let us say a polyethylene mold, which is better than just plastic. Polystyrene, for the low loss types. Yes, sir, that's my baby. No, sir, don't mean maybe. Yes, sir, that's my baby now. Baby. See, it doesn't work, nothing. You got to wind it up. You got to have the key, see? Stick it in the side where the socket is and wind it just as tightly as you can. Not too tightly, you'll break the spring. Wind it up. And wouldn't it be incredible if this world actually turned out to be one of these big balls with a key sticking out the side of it and somebody's winding it up? And they forgot to wind it for the last 10,000 years we were running down? There she goes. Yes, sir. That's my baby. Feeling generally that things aren't going well, you know, these kind of eroding. I have a few things that I do for those of you who, I guess it's, no, it isn't a form of positive thinking. It's a form of, I suppose you might say, mental hypocrisy. No, not that. I mean, it's sort of a form of mental hopscotch. I have a phrase. Once in a while, when things get terrible, I pull out this letter that a guy wrote to me a couple of months ago that is headed The Office of Gene Shepherd. And there's... It does some great things, but it hasn't done anything for me yet. You know what the trouble is, don't you? You know what the trouble is, don't you? I have a feeling of... A kind of a feeling of dissatisfaction with me tonight. No, not with me, really, with the things. Seriously, here it is, it's Sunday night. What am I doing here? I can think of at least 25 places within a 100-mile radius that I would better and rather be, that would make me a better human being, you know, that would make me richer and fuller. And I'm not so rich and full as I used to be at all. Oh, no, I can remember the days when I was rich and full and bountiful. But now, I'm reduced to opening letters that guys write to me and have this kind of stuff in them. Somebody sent me 85 package wrappers from the Marlboro people. I have no reason to... Did I ever make any ridiculous offer for people to send Marlboro package... What was the ridiculous offer that I made? I was going to give them executive positions. What idle dreams was I idly dreaming that night? I was going to give anybody an executive position. Don't be ridiculous. Oh, I guess I know what it is, yeah. Yeah, well, we'll save that later on. This is the best premium you ever got for doing anything, buddy. How would you like to be a big-time ad executive? How would you like to make dough? How would you like to sit at Sardi's every weeknight? Just sit there and all these people all around you waiting for you to say something profound, or at least say something, so that they can all say yes to it. How would you like to be that? Well, if you stay tuned, friends, and smoke 35 packages of Marlboros a day, this could very easily happen to you, because we have this giant free offer of a wonderful position with the ad agency open for Marlboro smokers. And anyway, anyone in his right mind smokes Marlboros. It's ridiculous for me to even talk about them. I called up the agency the other day and says, look, I don't want to talk about Marlboros. Why should I talk about the obvious all the time? And I said, now you go ahead, because we want to take over the whole cigarette world. We want everybody to smoke Marlboros, drive the rest of the competitors right out of the business. We're ruthless. And I don't blame them, because all those inferior brands... Anyway, for those of you who are in your right mind, we would highly recommend Marlboro cigarettes. And don't forget to save the box tops, because these box tops could very easily... vault you into a position of... stay tuned. We'll tell you about our great free offer later on in the program. I have that feeling that that comes over me about four or five times a year. And it's a feeling of... like you don't care. And that is a terrible thing to say in 20th century civilization. Terrible. When I was about 6 years old, I was reading all these fables and stuff. You know how kids read story books and fables, and they get told all sorts of advice. And one of the things that came out of all this advice was that one of the most admirable traits of man was ambition. Ambition to get ahead. Get ahead at all costs. Well, they didn't exactly say that, but they said you got to get ahead. Get going. And I followed that for a long time. I was really ambitious. I did all sorts of things. But then it seemed to me that all the trouble in the world came from ambitious people. The true trouble. You know, Hitler was pretty ambitious. Real ambitious guy. He had all kinds of ambitions. And, you know, they never said in any of these fables what your ambition should be. Never really what you should... You should just be ambitious, that's all. Like, there's this famous man that I always hear... described as sincere. Somebody says, I'm so amazed how sincere this guy is. And I said, sincere about what? Well, just sincere, you know? Well, so here I am. I'm ambitious, but I got no way to be ambitious. Nothing to, you know, to try. I got to have a point. I got to have a direction. So I'm open for suggestions. I'd like to just, I'm pretty open for suggestions. Is there anyone out there who would like to be dandled on my knee? I'm in a knee-dandling mood tonight. I'll never forget when I was in third grade, we used to have this game we called knee-dandling. We used to choose up partners and, you know, dandle each other on our knees. Up and down like that. It was one of the best periods of my life, my third grade period. Funny thing about that third grade period, well, it wasn't so funny. I guess it was fairly normal. It was okay. It was okay. Things were great in those days. Things were great in those days. Not really. No, they weren't. They were pretty crummy, actually. I was terrible in arithmetic. I think we were having multiplication tables in those days. And I formed a kind of mental block against numerical type figures. Not other types, but just numerical types. And since that day, I have not made 1 cent of money. Not 1 cent. I have deliberately and consistently destroyed myself as I go on this long pathway towards the eternal pinnacle of the eternal pyramid. You know. But then I suppose it's okay on this quiet summer evening. Tonight, let's have a spill the beans night. I mean, it's a good time to do it, since nobody listens in the summertime, and I'm not saying anything in the summertime. We're just sitting here in this quiet vacuum. Let us have a spill the beans. I'll spill the beans tonight, boy. Right out on the floor. I had this friend who was a dentist, and he bought this oriental rug. And he didn't know anything about it. You know, he just bought an oriental rug for his waiting room. And it was a pretty jazzy oriental rug. And he put it down, and everything was okay until one night this woman came in with this real bad toothache. And she's sitting there waiting for him to come out of his office, and she's looking at this rug. She's following all these lines. You know how an oriental rug looks, you know, with all these lines? She sat there for about 5 minutes, and all of a sudden she saw what that rug was saying. She got up and called the cops. My friend got 30 days and lost his license. I mean, you see how you step into this stuff? And with the best of intentions. By the way, it is the best of all possible worlds. Dr. Pangloss will appear as a special guest tonight. For those of you who are interested in the inner workings of your world and mine, for those of you who wish to enrich your lives, stay tuned. Oh, you'd be surprised at all the wondrous flashes of light that will be yours before this night is up. You will be very surprised. We have messages of interest to all of you. Messages of interest to all of you. You know, it's kind of like being in an opium den, but nobody's smoking opium. And this feeling something should happen, and it isn't happening, you know. This feeling of incipient evil, but no evil. You know, it's like, Hey, did you see this guy out in this opium den with his radio turned on? Just as I say that, he comes up to one elbow and looks at the radio sleepily. He says, that's what's the matter with this stuff. They're selling me phony junk again. You know, so stay tuned, friends. No, I'm not going to stop, you know, it's not that important. So stay tuned, friends and neighbors. We have all these wondrous pictures and things ready for you. You've seen bargains, but you wait or you take a look at the bargains in your General Tires summer special sale. Guaranteed used tires, $3 and up.
Yankees, 8 runs, 9 hits, 1 error. Kansas City, 6 runs, 12 hits, and 3 errors. The White Sox won a doubleheader over the Washington Senators.
Look for the sign that says Miller High Life, the champion of bottled beer, Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee.
It is, too. This is WOR New York.
We're giving you a brief period of about 10 seconds just to get calmed down. Isn't that nice? Don't you feel that wonderful repose coming over you? There's a guy out in Yonkers contemplating his navel. It's not a very good place to do it in Yonkers. Let's just sit here for a minute, you know, just for a moment, and think. This is our thinking period. Once a week, we here on WOR believe in true public service. Well, no, it isn't that we don't always believe in true public service, but once a week we give you this true public service program, which is a 20-second period devoted to audience participation. 20 seconds of thinking on your part. Come on, think. What are you doing? Don't just sit there. Think. I'm talking to you. Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have brought it on so early. I know it's difficult. We should save that for later in the year, this thinking. I'll tell you about a friend of mine who bought a ticket to a thing. This was very funny. Last night at the jazz concert, we had this jazz concert last night at Louis Sheridan, and it was quite a rousing success, I think, artistically in every way. All kinds of people there. And I was standing backstage, and the fellow who was with me was one of the people who was involved in it, and he's peeking out through the curtains, you know, through the wings to see all the people out there. And he sees this crowd of about 2,500 people. And he says, you know, when I look at this crowd, he says, I can't help but remembering one of my most terrible things that ever happened to me. He says, this thing was terrible beyond all, just beyond, almost beyond thinking. It was so terrible. I hate to think about it. He went to a box office here in town and he bought a ticket. It was supposed to be some kind of a concert or something at Lewis Own Stadium. He bought a ticket. He, you know, heard about this thing, and he bought the ticket, and he went down there. And so he got in his car the night of the event, and he drove to the stadium, and he gave him the ticket at the gate, and he didn't see anybody around there. He gave him the ticket, and he went in through, and there it was. You know, the stars were there, and it was nice and warm. And he went up to his seat, and there was absolutely nobody there. He was the only one there. He was the audience. And these performers were up on the stage performing, and he was clapping. Hooray! 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 And he'd stop. He says, it was terrible. He'll never forget that. He says, it was awful, awful, awful. Well, I was, and have been, part of many historical events myself. You, as a living, breathing bit of protoplasm here in the 20th century, how many pieces of, well, actual history have you been part of? Like if you read of Napoleon's retreat from Waterloo, there must have been a lot of guys pushing stuff and pulling things and griping and pretty mad about everything who were part of this giant milestone in history. They didn't know it, though. They were just mad. Their feet hurt. You know, they got shot in the head a couple of times. It was pretty irritating. It was raining. Oh, what a lousy day for a retreat. They're slogging along through the glop. Well, that's pretty much the same way we are. Here we are. We're in the middle of a tremendous transition period in history, a giant transition period. We're in the great transition period from the day of man as an individual today to the day of man as a mass, just a giant mass. And it's an enormous change that's taking place, and we're all part of it. And each one of us has been part of historical little incidents now and then that will be later recorded and probably already are recorded in books, one kind or another. I'll give you an example of that. One day, I used to have a season pass to see the Cincinnati Reds play baseball when I was in Cincinnati. I had a friend who was on the management or something. And so one day I decided to go to the ball game. It was a quiet summer afternoon, just like any other quiet summer afternoon. The only difference was that I was there. It was a quiet summer afternoon. And I went out to the ballpark. I was off. So I had my pass, and I showed my pass to the guy at the gate, and I walked in through. And you know how when you go to the ball game, you go underneath the stands, and there's always these guys running around with hot dog cases and guys selling scorecards and that. Well, they were all just sort of standing around. Nobody was shouting, nothing. Just sort of standing around. They had funny looks on their faces. And then I went up the ramp and out onto the field where the seats were. And the ball players were warming up. It was about 5 minutes before game time. And I looked around and I thought that it was a mirage. Believe it or not, I was at and part of the smallest crowd to ever attend a major league ball game. I was right there that afternoon. There were less than 100 of them. Have you ever seen 100 people scattered over a park that has 40,000 seats in it? It's terrible. You suddenly begin to have this oppressive feeling of imminent disaster, that something is going to... We're all going to be... You don't know. You know, there's this terrible feeling of being alone with the world. The world has receded from you. It's like if one morning you drove out to the Hudson River Parkway in your car, and you get out on the parkway, and there's no other cars there. And it's the rush hour. And you're out there, you see no cars for miles. There'd be this terrible panicky feeling. Where is everybody? Well, eventually, it was pretty pathetic. There was a guy sitting out in right field, and there were a couple of guys sitting in center field, and there was one guy on the foul line in left. And then gradually they began to draw together until pretty soon they were huddled. This poor little pitiful band of humanity was huddled back of home plate, just huddled back there for warmth from the outside world. And so I was part of the vast historical movement of mankind toward mass man. That was just one little incident in this great pathway. One little incident. You know, we're all part of this thing, this urge to become part of the mass. I was driving along the Sawmill River Parkway today, and I noticed an interesting thing. You know when you come to the toll gates, where they have all these little signs, flashing signs, they slow up, 10-cent toll and all that jazz? They have about 6 or 7 gates across, all with the green lights that mean these are the toll gates that you go through. Well, I noticed that the cars, there would be 45 cars lined up at one toll gate, and there would be 3 toll gates not being used. It's the urge to nuzzle bumpers once and twice and against one another, huddling together for warmth against this onrushing. Just outside, just beyond, you know, if you look out, look out. Go ahead, look out. Yeah, that's all right. Go ahead and look out. Just look out, see? And just on the other side, there's no telling what's out there. All those dark things. It's really, you know, we're all alone here in this world. Really, all alone here in this world. I have a friend that sells globes. He sells globes, and they're made out of plastic. They look like beach balls with Asia Minor painted on the top of them. And they're in these gay, wonderful, scintillating, beautiful, non-fading colors. And they're full of air. These globes, full of good old, friendly, hot air. And that's probably the most realistic globe that I've ever seen. And I didn't realize it until just thinking about it now. Like a big beach ball full of hot air. And there we are, in beautiful, non-fading colors. Except that some of us find that we're fading now and again. No, you can stop fading. Just sit there and say to yourself, I will not fade. Say it, I will not fade.
Stop yourself
from fading. I remember reading a story once by John Collier about a man that found himself fading all the time. And he wasn't a man who played with dice either. He wasn't a crap shooter. He just found that he was fading from time to time. And then one day he found that it was pleasant to fade. And after that he got so that he was a habitual fader. He'd just fade out of civilization for a while and then fade back in again when he had to get something to eat and then fade out again. In and out. Just fading back and forth. We might be surrounded by thousands of people who have learned how to fade. And they're not going to tip their hand, you know, because it'd be a terrible stampede toward the exits. If you ever knew, you know. So, they say that mankind's mind is capable of anything. You've heard him say this? I think it's ridiculous, but they say that the mind is capable of anything. Well, let's all concentrate on fading tonight. If we all concentrate and if we do it in unison, we might make Manhattan fade right out. I can see these day types sitting there, and all of a sudden it's fading all around them. Hey, what's happening? The file cabinet's fading. Nobody. We've got to have complete cooperation, and so naturally the whole thing falls in shambles. There is no such thing as complete cooperation. None. And that's just the way it should be, you know? If I want to fade, I'll fade, buddy. I'm going to go at that. I knew a man who put down roots in a place called Ringling Brothers, Ohio.
put down roots. He stood out in the backyard during this rainstorm one day. Have you ever seen a kid stand out in the rain with his mouth open, drinking the rain? I used to stand out in the backyard in Chicago when it rained and drink rain. And I'll never forget the day that it rained 7-year-old Kentucky bourbon. You know, it's the greatest rainstorm I ever experienced. It was one of the turning points in my life. I came in and my mother says, "What? Where'd you get the dough for the licorice?" I said, "Licorice." And then I fell on the kitchen table and began to sing old barracks ballads that I learned in second grade. But about this guy. Yeah, he stood out in the backyard one day, and then he found that in the rain, he found that he was taking root. Little tendrils were shooting out of him. Little roots were digging down. And he found he liked it, and so today he's an oak tree. He just stands out in the backyard now all the time. He has a nest of tent worms in his hair. Kind of poetic in a way, my dear. It is, in a way. Can't you see him standing out there with those tent worms? Every little living thing is entitled to his work, is entitled to his way, is entitled to his place in the scheme of things. Well, speaking of the scheme of things, you realize, of course, that our basic scheme here is to sell you Marlboro cigarettes, Triumph TR3s, Niedig Schmiedig, Double Biedig, Pipkins, all these things. This is our basic scheme. And I have been employed by a cartel to cleverly, in one way or another, you follow the scheme? Well, the first thing that we're going to have to keep in mind in connection with bettering ourselves, wouldn't you really, seriously, now come on, friends, come on, viewers, seriously for a minute, come on, seriously, friends, all right, seriously, honestly now, wouldn't you rather be a better you, really? Now, don't try to brazen it through. Yeah, I know how it is. Everybody oh, what do you mean? I'm a great me. Oh, no. Come on, now. Don't be silly. There's nobody here to tell. I'm not going to say anything. And I admit it. See, that's one thing. I admit it. Why don't you admit it? Wouldn't you rather, Ruther, be a better you? Now, come on. One of the best ways I know, friends, to become a better you is to establish a few resolutions, a few rules for living, a modus operandi. And one of the best rules for living to really create a better you. Why don't you try it tomorrow morning? Start smoking Marlboros. You'll be surprised how all those shingles will come off, all those, you know, those places where the moss is beginning to grow, all this stuff will go within 2 or 3 days. If you, of course, smoke Marlboros. Hey, did you see the new thing they've got in the Marlboro package? I was shown this thing. It's real clever, and I was shown this little device by a Marlboro smoker. They have just got out on the market with this thing. I have never seen any other package that has this in it. And if you have the old Marlboro package, I'm sorry. The new one is very, very... There's a very clever thing. When you open the top, you know, they have this flip-top box. Well, when you flip the top back, you'll notice right under the top, underneath that kind of a gold or silver foil that's inside, there's a thing, and I will not tell you what it is. Let it come as a surprise. I always have this feeling, whenever I open any kind of a package, a vague disappointment when I find what is supposed to be in the package. I'd love to open a package of Wheaties and find it stuffed with $10 bills. Or open up a package of Marlboros and find that it's stuffed with .32 caliber cartridges or something. But it's always Marlboros, which is great, you know. It's just, I mean, when you open a package, I guess you want Marlboros, but not always. But try it sometimes, friend. Make it a better you for tomorrow. Ask for Marlboros. Hello? Hello? He's gone. Let's try another one. Hello? Yes? The only reason I'm talking to you right now is that I want to make sure that we're making contact with Radioland. Are you out there? Is it coming through clearly? Fine. How are things in Radioland today? I see. What, you enjoyed the show last night? I'm very glad. That was a big $2 worth, wasn't it? The line at the soda machine. No. The line at the soda machine. What soda machine? No, I didn't see that. So then the gag fell right through, didn't it? Yeah, well, that's the way with gags. Well, listener type, you keep the flag flying out there in Radioland. Yeah. And I'll keep unreality going here in Studio Land, yeah? Yeah. You got home at 6 in the morning? Yeah. You had to avoid your father, who was going out for a clean limb game of golf at 6 in the morning, and you were coming home from a jazz concert at 6 a.m.? You saw him pull out the car, so you hit under the hedge, eh? Pretended you were a groundhog, eh? Well done. Well done. That's one of the things. Hold on. He's touched upon a very important part of 20th century life, and that is the part that we call protective coloration. Protective coloration is extremely important in our life. It's more important than it was in the days of the cavemen. I mean, you know, the guy had a club, he'd go out and sock something on the head, and that was the end of it. Once in a while, he would blend in with the weeds. But only when great necessity demanded that he do that. But we are in the weeds all the time because we find it better down here in the weeds. Now, our protective coloration takes many forms, many, many indeed forms, many forms. Now, you look at me. I am not at all what I appear to be. This is merely a mask. This is merely a mask that more or less covers up the real me that's underneath. The real me is a saber-toothed tiger. I couldn't dare go down the street the way I really am. I'd get shot in 5 minutes. They'd have me in a wagon with a bunch of Doberman pincers or something. And it's sad that we can't be what we really want to be. What would you really really, seriously, if you could do anything you wanted to do, what would you do? What would be the real you? It certainly wouldn't be what you're doing now and being what you are now. Oh, come on. What namby-pamby. You have sold out yourself. You have sold out yourself to accept what you have. That's ridiculous. How silly. For heaven's sakes. Might as well admit it. I admit it. Why don't you go ahead? Did I tell you about the time that I got this Meccano set once for Christmas? You know what a Meccano set is? All these little girders that you put together with... this is not for girls. They don't know what Meccano sets are. This is a boy-type comment. Or an ex-boy-type comment. I got this Meccano set for Christmas. And it was a Meccano set. Now, in our neighborhood, again, like every other neighborhood, we were loaded with social symbols. Our neighborhood judged a man by many things. And children were judged by many things. One of the things that we were judged by was the serial number of our Gilbert chemistry set. You know the chemistry sets? Well, if you had the little Model 3 chemistry set, you were way down the scale. But if you had the giant tabletop number 17B, you were, of course, a man among men. Well, this Meccano set that I got was a little Model 2C, which was the small non-motorized Meccano set that had three little girders and two screws and one bolt. And all you could make was a Model T-square out of it. I got a book that says, How to Make a Model T-Square with Your Meccano, number 3C set. So I made a T-square and I was done. And, I began to see. Our neighborhood had all kinds of social symbols. One of the social symbols that has almost completely disappeared from American life, but at one time, which was a very important social symbol, is the ice card social symbol. Do you remember the ice card they put in the window when you wanted ice, and this guy would go past with the ice truck, and he'd look up and see what number you had. Well, these were square cards for the benefit of those of you who have grown up during the electronic period. They were square cards, and on each side of the card, sort of printed around each side of it, were big numbers. There'd be 25, 50, 75, and 100, meaning pounds of ice. And whatever number you had up in your window, that was the number of pounds of ice you got. And in our neighborhood, the families were judged by the pounds of ice they'd get. And I remember this poor, pitiful little family down at the end of the block that never had over 25 up, ever. We used to, you have that terrible feeling. And once in a while, we would send them down, boxes of old Kool-Aid and stuff like that for holidays, kind of little charitable things. And no one would say anything. They just put it on the front porch and leave it. I was from a middle-class family, which was a 50-pounder. That was a good, solid, middle-of-the-road type family in our neighborhood, a 50-pounder. And the first house in the next block lived this kid whose family was a 75-pounder. A 75-pounder. Have you ever seen an iceman go up the front porch, or the back porch, rather, with a 75-pound chunk? It's a magnificent sight. Magnificent sight. Here's a family of stature, solidity. And there was the rumor that went around our neighborhood all the time about the family about six blocks away that was a 100-pound family. It was just a sort of a legend. It's a legend, like, you know how people say, I know a guy had five Cadillacs. What's a legend? He didn't really know that guy. He just liked to say he knew that guy. We didn't really know anybody who got a 100-pound cake of ice, but we like to dream or feel or think. It's, it's like the Paul Bunyan legends. That's how Paul Bunyan grows. Same way. It's the same thing. Nobody ever knew Paul Bunyan, going out chopping down 65 trees with one swipe of his axe and that. But they like to think there was somebody who could do this. You see, we like to create men bigger than men. We like to dream. This is the whole basis for Greek tragedy. Tragedy bigger than human tragedy. And that's pretty much the basis of all of drama and literature, to create bigger people than we are. And that's how we created this 100-pound family. There never was a 100-pound family anywhere. I doubt whether there ever existed any. And the only reason that they put this 100 pounds on the confounded card was to keep us in our place, this ice company. Let us know who sold the ice and who bought it, They got to keep the reins. But it was a wonderful dream. It was a dream of gods among men, of a mastodon among mice, that 100-pound family. See, you just have to look at it the way it is. You can't fool around anymore. You can't, You can't flub around. You got to look at it the way it is.
Thank you.
You mean you found a night girl? This is one of the rarest of all living creatures. It really is. Helen Elliott, night girl. Don't give me that. It's ridiculous. She... Hold on a minute. Get Helen Elliott. No.
Yeah?
This is WOR New York. We have records here. Gaunt Rockwell, and we'll be here bemoaning our fate until 1 o'clock tomorrow morning. We had a fellow call here a minute ago. It's sometimes one of the most pathetic of all things, seriously, friends, viewers, neighbors, sport fans. It's one of the most... By the way, I wonder, do any of you have the U.S. Department of Labor job classification book with you on there tonight? You know that every job, every occupation in the world is, that is at least in the United States, is classified and has a number after it, believe it or not. And one of the greatest that I ever ran across looking through this book, this is one of my favorite pieces of reading matter. Because it's a genuine cross-section of what mankind is doing to himself. There are all these things he's pursuing constantly. But there is also a great element of humor in it. Do you know that one of the official job classifications is a cracker stacker? Seriously, that is a fact. Everybody says, oh, he's made it up again. I have not made it up. Nobody believes anything I say anymore. Which, it doesn't bother me. I don't care. Don't believe it. But I'll bet before the year is out, if you keep looking at the New York Times job classifications, you know where they have the classified ads, there'll be an ad there for qualified cracker stacker. And then who's going to laugh out of the other side of the mouth? I'm laughing out of the other side of the mouth now, but I'll laugh out of the other side then. You see? That way. Because a cracker stacker exists. I wonder if eventually, though, the true classifications of mankind will come to the fore. The true classifications of what we really do. I heard a guy talking the other day on the radio. You know how they always do? They always start out with these wild cliches, which don't hold water. He said, yes, friends, it's time to hear all the news about America's number one sport, baseball. And I listened to that, and I says, now, wait a minute, I don't play baseball, and I don't know anybody who does play baseball. And it suddenly occurred to me that America's number one sport is not baseball, but watching. Just watching. We watch guys play baseball. We don't play baseball. We watch guys play baseball. And then, on the other hand, they'll say, and America's number two sport, football. I can see all these guys that... Like, for example, the board of directors here at WOR going out on a Saturday afternoon for a good game of football. How about some football? I can see Bob Leader on the phone calling Bob Smith. Hey, Bob, come on, bring the football. We're going to go out to the vacant lot, and we're going to kick it around a while. Huh, fat chance. See, the whole thing is that we're watchers. We're all watchers. We're all watching all the time. Either that or we sometimes listen, but we more often watch. Just sit there and watch. And did you see how NBC chickened out? NBC chickened out. Did you see the Tonight Show a couple of nights ago? Well, I was talking to the producer of Tonight, and I said, you know, there are 10,001 things that I would like to see on television, but I'll never see them because of laws and all kinds of things. Well, you know, all kinds of things. Yeah, I got all kinds of pictures I'd like to see on television. And so would you, if you'd only admit it. Well, the best way to see those pictures is to see them yourself in your own mind, see? So I told this guy on NBC, I said, I'll tell you what we ought to do on the Tonight Show. Why don't you just have a blank screen for 2 minutes and then play some real good mood music behind it and then say to the people, now look, people, it's your chance now to create all the pictures you want to create that you'll never see on television, ever. You can create them yourself. And you don't have to tell anybody what you saw. See, you can be embarrassed, or you can laugh uproariously and fall on the floor and kick over the beer. You can do all of that stuff, see. But you don't have to tell anybody what you saw, because it's yours. Your own thing, see. Oh, boy. This is such a great idea. Well, then you know what happened? All right, they chickened out. They figured that the audience would do it, see? The audience would sit out there and suddenly create all these great pictures, and then there would be this great wave of indignation. From all these little old ladies that created pictures, they'd start writing letters to NBC about the terrible stuff they had on television the other night. And they're not going to stand for it. And in fact, they're writing their congressman. See? Well, so here's how it came out. I thought it was a pretty good idea. Well, it came out this way. They came out with a screen, and there's Jack LaSkool, and he says, well, we've got a letter here from our old friend about town here, Gene Shepherd, who says, why don't you sit there? It says, everybody wonders about men from Mars. I don't wonder about men from Mars. It says, everybody wonders about men from Mars. Now, here's your turn. We'll put on this blank screen, and you can sit there, and you can picture your own man from Mars. See, thereby telling them what to picture, see, so that they don't get into any dangerous territory, thereby killing the whole point. Ploppo! Went down right on the floor, and then everybody's, oh, that Shepherd, what crummy ideas. Oh, that crummy old Shepherd again, what a cornball. And so then after it was over, LaSkool, he sat there with a dumb look on his face, and he said, well, he says, that man from Mars sure looked pretty square to me. I guess referring to the squareness of the screen. Oh, boy, and the old gag went down like a balloon that was shot right through the spinal cord. Did I ever tell you about the guy who, this is an awful thing happened in Cincinnati. About this guy that went to this cheapy dentist, and the dentist reached in the back there with the pliers, and he pulled out this tooth, and he made a terrible mistake, and he pulled this guy's backbone right out through. Well, I can tell you the rest of the story. No, this was a serious thing. It was, and he was sitting there. He was absolutely spineless. And the dentist was terrified, so they rushed about 19 specialists there, and these guys were keeping him alive. Did you hear about that? They were keeping him alive on a diet of raw eggs. And they were feeding him all these raw eggs, and he was alive. He was doing okay, and he was growing a new backbone. And then one day, this egg man didn't deliver any eggs to him, and he just died right there, see? And you know what they did? They took this egg man up and charged him with murder. That guy got 30 years. Didn't deliver the eggs. Well, he was spineless anyway. It's just as good. You got to weed out the dead wood. Is there any dead wood out there that would like to be weeded out this evening? Any driftwood? Any flotsam and jetsam on the vast stream of humanity being cast up on the shores once in a while? Have you ever seen driftwood? You've seen driftwood. They make lamps out of it now. I know that there's a little place just outside of... Excuse me, madam. Just outside of Excelsior Fireworks, Ohio, where they make driftwood. They have a driftwood factory. Well, they don't make lamps. They make driftwood. And then they sell all this stuff to Florida. And there's a guy in Florida that throws it in the water, and then he pulls it out again, and then he makes lamps and charges $42.50 a piece, genuine Ohio driftwood. And you know how they make driftwood? Any of you interested in that? Have you ever seen plastic wood? You've never seen plastic wood? When I was a kid, plastic wood was one of the biggest things around. They build a whole forest out of plastic wood in northern Indiana. They don't have trees there. And they had all these cellophane leaves and stuff. Oh, it's wonderful. You could hear the sound of them rustling in the darkness once in a while. It's great to be in the forest, you know. Hello, listener, are you still in the forest? You're out there in the dark, huh? I saw a dead raccoon on the Sawmill River Parkway today. No, I just saw him there. I saluted when I went by on my rush towards eventual destruction. Unfortunately, we have wreaked it on the raccoons first. What's that? You tried to pay for somebody on the toll booth on the parkway, yeah? What happened? They got a new thing now? Oh, yeah, drop it in the basket. I know that. And this little mechanical voice says, thank you, up. Yeah, I know. Wait till they come through there and they have Sophia Loren saying thank you in a dubbed voice, dubbed by an out-of-work actress who lives on the West Side. Just the thought, you know. We got to add a little jazz, a little some life, you know, to driving and that. You never know. I have an idea about a slogan for the back of I've had some great ideas for slogans on license plates. You know how they have the Empire State or the Land of Lakes? How about this one from Alabama? Yankee, go home. You know how they feel about things. You know how it is. Or it says, mind your own business. Something like that. What do you mean? I've already given. Oh, I gave that already. Didn't I say anything about Miller Beer? Sure. You want another one? Miller Beer is the champagne of beer. The Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee. That's Milwaukee, Missouri. And while we're on the, while we're on the subject of great things, I was driving all weekend with a Triumph TR3. And whenever I go past people driving these old tubs, I would just sit there and look granite-faced. That's the best way to make people mad. And then they'd look out and they'd say, look at that guy looking granite-faced. Who does he think he is, just because he's driving a TR3? I didn't say anything, you know, I just drove along. It's a wonderful feeling. It makes you feel 38 feet tall and 6 inches wide. But if you're any of you are interested. Oh, for heaven's sakes, what do you mean interested? It's such a sad thing that the American who drives so much, who spends so much time flubbing around with these giant old tubs that he buys with the fins. Did you see that cartoon, Lichty? I think Lichty consistently is one of the funniest cartoonists in the business. It shows a guy in a showroom trying to sell a car to another guy. And this car's got these giant fins that stick way up in the air. And the salesman is saying to the man, he says, and you notice that there's another feature added this year. He says, those tiny red lights at the top of the fins that blink off and on when you're in the vicinity of airports, required by law. A new feature. Well, it's that way. It's such a sad thing that we buy so many things with the attitude of children. People will buy automobiles with the Elizabethan needlepoint upholstery, which 6 weeks later they're sick and tired of, and they'll buy saffron-colored cars with chocolate wheels and so on, and it's a sad thing. And here you have, well, the people who follow sport cars, of course, generally are people who are interested in function rather than external, in so many instances, superficial design, very superficial. And it to me is always one of the most interesting of all the anachronisms we have in our American life, and that is that we have more cars, more people drive cars than any other nation on earth, and yet fewer people enjoy the act of driving. There are very few people who drive just for the thrill of driving. And I don't mean getting out, you know, going for a ride. That's a different thing. I mean the actual act of driving as a wonderful experience. There are very few people in America do that. And it's a philosophy that even confuses Americans when you say that driving can be just as much a sport as, say, sailboating. And I don't mean driving fast, and I don't mean cutting guys off and all that jazz. I mean just driving this machine can be just as much a sport as, say, motorboating or something like that, which is another form of transportation, that's all. But we've gotten so far away from that concept here in America that most people, when I say that to them, they get this funny look.